Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Hey, and welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Here today, graced by the presence of Paul Lowe, who many people know as Sweet Paul, the EIC mastermind behind Sweet Paul Magazine. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. This is right on the heels of your winter release, which is just perfect for this holidays. Mm-hmm. Starting from the beginning, though, you aren't from around here. You were born somewhere else.
I was born and raised in Norway, in Oslo, the capital, which is, a million people, which is now my neighborhood in Brooklyn.
So yeah.
In the beginning, I was like, where the hell are all these people?
People.
I've been living now in New York for 6 years.
Yeah, and where were you prior to that? Mainly in Norway?
Or? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And do you remember certain things that you ate when you're growing up, like what is it, lutefisk? And
lutefisk,
yeah,
I hate that. Ugh, it's horrible.
What is it?
My dad loves it. It's actually cod.
Yeah,
it's dry cod.
Yeah,
like bacalao.
Yeah,
that's been soaked in lye.
Lye. Yeah,
sounds wonderful. It gets sort of a gelatinous texture.
All this which sounds is so appetizing. Gross. Yeah.
And then you serve it with bacon bits and bacon fat.
Yeah.
Potatoes and peas.
Yeah. So everyone eats the little bacon bits and leaves the fish.
That's what I always did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some other traditional foods of Norway?
Tons of pork.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Scandinavia is like, you know, pork mania. And of course, we have a lot of fish.
Yeah,
a lot of good fish and lots of good seafood. But I remember growing up, it was like tons of pork in every variation you can think of.
Yeah, see, I think I had the preconcept that it's fish, pickled fish, herrings.
And well, it's a lot of that too.
Yeah,
yeah.
But with this rise of Nordic cuisine, in the world right now, are you seeing a lot of Nordic influences come to New York?
I've seen it with the whole pickle, the whole pickle adventure that's happening now, everywhere. Because that's a very Scandinavian thing, to pickle everything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had short summers. So we had to, you know, find a way to preserve a summer.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, we were pickling. And that's, you know, that huge thing is absolutely, you know, coming here.
Yeah. And it's funny because it is a preservation method, but now we're in this rife season. Winter has this glorious light in Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's amazing. It's this light blue light that you find, which is just so beautiful.
Yeah, and we'll get to those influences because it's completely resonant in the latest issue of Sweet Paul.
Yeah, I tried.
Yeah, yeah. So we worked over in Europe for a little. Did you always figure you were going to be a stylist or working in design somehow?
No, my life has been complete, like, it's so random. I grew up, I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
And I was pretty certain that that's what I was going to end up as. But when I was 18, I applied to the, in Norway, we just had one school back then. So I applied, I didn't get in. And I was like, well, FM, you know. They don't know what they're missing.
Yeah.
And then a friend of my mom, actually, he had a flower shop, and he was like, oh, Paul is so creative. Maybe he wants to, you know, work at my shop a little bit.
I think he's just trying to get free labor at that point.
Well, I did get paid.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did that, and I thought, actually, that was kind of fun. So I turned myself into a florist. So I was doing flowers for like 6-8 years. And then a friend of mine was a photographer, and she was like, yeah, I think you could be a good stylist. Do you want to try? So I did a couple of jobs with her, and then we went up to a magazine and showed them, and they were like, oh, this is great. We'll buy whatever you make.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I remember going home making a list, you know, pros and cons with, you know, with having a flower shop, because I had my own shop, and the list was... The list got like longer and longer. And I was thinking, okay, I'm gonna be a stylist.
Yeah. So that first job where that photographer said, "Hey, mm-hmm. do you want to try being a stylist?" What did you do? What is a stylist? Is somebody that moves things around into a pattern, or is it somebody that makes things?
No. It's different from different people. What I do, I usually come up with the whole concept or the whole story.
Yeah.
What it's about, the recipes, the food. You know, what the food is on, the plates, the backgrounds, all the props. So that's what I do. So I remember the first story we did was about apples. And we went into... She knew about this old abandoned house in a forest. Yeah. So we went in there. It's actually kind of spooky. So we went in there and kind of like opened the door. And they had some beautiful old tables and some old wallpapers. So we were doing everything in there. It turned out really pretty, actually.
Yeah.
And that's now like 20 years ago. Yeah. It's incredible.
So it sounds like it's a bit location scouting, part art directing, that the stylist is really this linchpin for other creatives to work around.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
So I constantly am, being a photographer, constantly ask art directors, can we please have a stylist on set? Because knowing how important are all their skills.
It's very important. Now, we also make your job much easier because, you know, we do this every day, so we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, so we can say, not that plate. Step away from the plate. Use this one.
Yeah. So, I mean, you must have an enormous collection of wares, of plates.
I used to have.
Yeah.
When I moved to the States, I sold everything. And I've been trying. I've been trying to sort of keep stuff, you know, not piling up. But actually, the other day, my partner said, Paul, we need to have a talk. So, it's obviously not going that well.
Yeah, yeah.
With the piling.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's hard to sometime not be a hoarder while you're a stylist. You see all these little inspirations everywhere.
Yeah, and I'm often working on several stories at a time.
Yeah.
So I have, like, piles for every story. So I think he's a little, like... I need to get an office.
So, I mean, it's winter right now. The winter issue just came out. But where's your mind? Like, what season are you actually in?
Well, right now I'm thinking next fall.
Yeah.
But I'm working mostly on the spring issue.
Yeah. And what are themes, topics of the spring issue?
Spring tarts, peas, asparagus, flowers... Anything that's kind of like you feel is springy.
Yeah. How hard is it to source those things at this time, though?
It's not that hard, actually. If you're thinking about food like ingredients, if you go to the farmer's market, you can find a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There are actually people who sell like pea shots and those things. So it's possible. But it's not, you know, it doesn't have the same... It's not as abundant as it is in spring.
Yeah.
You know.
So when conceptualizing winter, we were probably in summer, maybe even spring?
Yeah, summer.
Yeah. What were your thoughts? I mean, we talked about that amazing Nordic light.
Yeah.
And you did this spread in the magazine all about driftwood. And it was white, and it was blown out, and it was dreamlike.
Yeah, When I'm creating sort of... when I'm putting together, you know, each issue, I try to think about what would I like to see. Because I use myself as the reader.
Yeah.
So I just come up with stuff that I want to see and I want to kind of learn more about, and then I just take it from there. And the old driftwood thing was, I ordered a couple of boxes of driftwood on Etsy.
Yeah.
People sell everything, anything. And they've been lying around for a couple of years. I'm thinking, I need to do something with them. And I was thinking, it would be kind of cool to do something holiday with driftwood. I don't have everything I've seen that.
Yeah.
So I try to come up with stuff that, you know, people hasn't seen before.
Yeah.
And it turned out really pretty.
No, it was stunning. And, you know, all that white wash. And
yeah.
Usually that stuff can be so precious, like overly precious. And there was some kind of rustic appeal still to this.
Well, I think the thing is that, you know, the story was a little bit feminine. But, you know, I'm a man, so I do it, like, with my touch. I think if a woman did it, it would be maybe, I don't mean to say anything wrong, but it might be a little over the board.
Yeah.
You know? So, I always try to keep, like, a rustic thing in everything I do.
Yeah. So, when did you start, Sweet Paul? Because this is issue 7, right?
Yes, I started it 2 years ago.
Yeah. And, like you said, it, you know, you try to figure out what you want to read and you put that into the magazine.
Yeah.
Did you start it for yourself? Did you start it for as a lookbook? Did you start
it? No, I actually started it for myself. I started as something creative that I could do where no one can tell me what they want. No one can come and say, I don't like that plate. I don't like that wallpaper. I don't like this. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Because I get a little tired of, you know how photo shoots are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of people. Everyone has an opinion. Sorry, and I was just really tired of being told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, I was like, I want to create something that's 100% mine.
Yeah.
This is my aesthetic, this is what I believe in. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not 100% you, and that's what I find so engaging, that it's collaborative.
Yeah,
that you have your favorite people in there.
Yes. The fun thing with the holiday issue is that I asked, you know, my favorite photographers to cook, style, and shoot, you know, a holiday dish each that they, you know, that meant something to them.
Yeah.
And at first, I think some of them kind of panicked a little bit. But I have to say, it turned out really, really cool. And people love that story because they kind of get to know the people that I work with.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I work with a lot of the same people.
Yeah.
So yeah, people love that story.
Yeah. I may butcher some of these people's names.
Oh, that's fine.
Alexandra, how do you say her last name?
Grablevsky.
She does a wonderful gravlax.
Yeah, it's so pretty.
Yeah.
Ooh, and that was like so close to my heart because, you know, my grandmother used to make gravlax every holiday.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. And we would eat. She would actually make like from 2 huge salmons. And by the end of the holiday, there was nothing left.
But you range from things that are foreign to you, too. Francis Janish makes a bobo tea, which I just learned. A bobo Thai. I'm not exactly sure.
I'm not sure how we pronounce it either. Well, she's from South Africa, and that's a very South African dish.
Yeah, but it's funny. It's like a mix between bread pudding and meat pie.
Yeah.
But it's delicious.
Yeah, I never. She told me several times, Francis, if you're listening, you told me you would make it for me.
Yeah.
You still haven't. Very disappointed.
Yeah, now we have it on air. We have proof.
Yes, please.
Yeah, we're going to hold her to it.
But it looks really good. And I also thought it kind of looked a little bit like moussaka.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But not as
some of
creamy.
The spices.
Yeah.
No. It looks much drier, but it seems really good.
Yeah. What else was on there? Well, Ellen Silverman, who's one of my favorite food photographers.
Mm-hmm.
Her, what was it? Tuscan herb. Tuscan,
yes. It looked
pork roast, yeah.
It looked amazing. I have to say, I'm so extremely lucky to have all these extremely talented people to work with me on this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they work for, you know, very little and no pay. And, you know, these are big names in food photography.
Yeah.
So I'm really lucky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it shows that they're excited to, like you said, do something without direction. To give them an assignment and say, do all these parts by yourself. As intimidating as that is, it's also exhilarating.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the whole working on a shoot, for me, it's all about it's kind of like a dance with you and the photographer. You know, it's very important to have like the right mood and you know, we're there to try to create something as beautiful as possible.
Yeah. So what kind of dance is it?
Well, it's
more ballet or is it hip hop?
No, it's more like a traditional Norwegian folk dance. Yes. Wearing clogs, of course.
Because you can't hear anything with the still photography, so you don't hear clomping around. So in the 2 years, you have these constant themes in there, too. You have Recipe Mondays, Craft Fridays. Mm. What are some of the other thematic features?
Well, I have this one thing called from Mormor's Kitchen. Mormor means grandmother in English, in Norwegian. And it's these little stories from when I was a kid and growing up. Because my grandmother lived with us. And she was an amazing cook. So she was the one who taught me how to cook and sort of got my whole interest for food going. And she did everything like the old-fashioned way, you know. She would actually make, like, gravy and bechamel from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, there were no mixes in our kitchen.
Yeah. Did you carry on that tradition then? Did you DIY in your own kitchen, or were you fed mainly by your grandmother?
No, I certainly do.
Yeah.
I do. There's no reason to make gravy from a mix.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, it's funny because I actually do know some stylists who don't really cook for themselves. But I feel
I'm not gonna sit here and lie. I don't cook every night. I certainly don't. Because when it's your work, if you've been cooking all day, it's like if you're a chef in a restaurant. You come out and the only thing you kind of want is just like a hot dog or something.
Yeah.
Because you're just so fed up of food. I know it sounds really strange to be so fed up of food, but you want something very simple. I can come home and craving like a good piece of bread with butter and a slice of cheese and I'm happy.
Yeah, that's what I have for breakfast.
Yeah, I don't need any fancy stuff at all. But you know, when I have the time, I do love to cook.
Yeah. And what are some of your, you know, better recipes? Are they of Norwegian descent or?
No, I'm very proud of my maple syrup chicken. Ooh. I do a really good roasted chicken where I put the chicken, a fingerling potatoes, shallots, garlic, all of it in a roasting pan, and then olive oil. I do some apricot jam and maple syrup.
Ooh,
on top of the chicken.
Wonderfully wintry.
It's so good. And the gravy, man, the gravy. Because you take those drippings, you add a little more maple syrup, and then stock and cream, and just let that simmer. It's like heaven. I decided I'm going to open up Sweet Paul's gravy restaurant and just serve that and everything because I think it's going to be a big hit.
Yeah, just gravy over everything.
That's the best gravy ever. Yeah. I tell you, I'm not lying. It's the best gravy ever.
Yeah, yeah. Is it in any of your magazines, on your blog?
I had it both on the blog and it was on in the fall issue, the last year.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. Let's actually talk about your winter issue right now, because there are some amazing recipes that, you know, we haven't mentioned yet. Mm. And they aren't of food. They're of crafts.
Mm-hmm.
Making your own wrapping paper and iterations of new wreaths.
Mm.
The wrapping paper, how did you concept that? I mean, you know, obviously, I'm one of many that goes out and buys, or I'm actually a terrible wrapper, so sometimes I just put things in bags or underneath blankets.
Well, that's fine, too. Yeah. Well, in each issue, there's a bunch of craft stuff. And I'm very big on recycling and using stuff that... I think it's amazing if you can make something of something that you have. So I started with just a roll of white paper, like white crafting paper. And then I have to admit, I kind of like looked in the shelves and in the closet to see what I had, which I could use. Like old stamps, ribbons, colorful tape, all that stuff. I just think it's really cool to make something that looks really good out of something that, you know, people wouldn't think about using.
Yeah, well, that's how I think lobster first was concepted.
Could be.
Yeah, artichokes. There's a whole bunch of things that aren't yes. the most slightly yes. raw thing.
No, I know. Yeah, raw artichoke.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. The wreaths, too. I mean, there were so many different versions mm-hmm. from your traditional, almost garland-like, to my favorite, and it's not just because of my profession, the photo wreath.
Yeah, that's a really cool one. I took old photos, black and white photos, and I simply just glued them onto a cardboard wreath. It's kind of like a, may I say, wreath of memories. A little cheesy, but... Yeah. My favorite was the one...
It's the season to be cheesy.
Exactly. My favorite was the one with all the little... I bought a bunch of wooden beads in different sizes.
Yeah.
And glued it onto a metal wreath. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
It was very, like, modern Scandinavian.
Yeah. When you go out and see wooden balls, do you buy them with the intention of making a wreath? Or do you just go out and... buy little bits and pieces and figure out how they connect?
Well, sometimes I just buy stuff because I think it's cool. Like, yeah. I went to Brimfield Flea Market and I bought a huge bag of old stamps. I paid like $40 for a big bag. And I came home and I opened it up and I was thinking, oh my God, there's so many beautiful colors. So actually the other day I made like a whole picture where I just took like different kinds of blue stamps and just glue them next to each other
yeah.
on a board. And it was actually really cool.
Yeah. So are you at home crafting most of the time?
If I'm not working on a story, I'm usually, no. It's if I'm crafting, I'm doing it for a story. Because, you know, it's my job. I do it so much. So no, I don't put on Frank Sinatra and have a glass of wine and like, oh, I'm going to craft.
Yeah.
No.
But, I mean, I think that's, you know, at least sometimes my mind's eye of what stylists do in their spare time.
Yeah, that's just a lie. it doesn't work that way. I think when we don't work, we're kind of like, just give me the remote control and the Coke and I'm really happy.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of the more absurd things that people have asked you to make for them?
Oh... Well, the most absurd thing ever was a turduckling.
Yeah.
A chicken inside a duck inside a turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took us a whole day because there were like a different sauce and a different stuffing between each layer. And I told them beforehand, this is going to look like total crap. And of course it did. It was just a horror.
Yeah.
I mean, who wants to, like, really? That's... This shows that, okay, if you're ordering that, you have too much money. You know?
Yeah.
What's wrong with just a duck?
Well, I mean, I guess I realized during this Thanksgiving that you should almost only eat things that, like, almost physically happen in nature. And if I ever saw, you know, a duck up a chicken's ass, up a turkey's ass, I probably wouldn't want to eat it.
No, you'd probably be like, ugh.
Yeah.
Instead of, there's nothing wrong with you if you're like, that looks tasty.
Yeah.
Just remove the feathers and we're ready to go.
Yeah. So when you concept these stories and people say, oh, we need these kind of crafts for this kind mm-hmm. of food, what side of the fence do you sit on? Do you just do, you know, the prop styling, the product styling, or do you also do the food styling? And
no, I
do
the food styling too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you gain that skill? Was it literally on the job?
You know, it was nothing I ever, like, went to school for. I haven't gone to school for anything. It just happened. It was just something, you know, I started to do. And I was testing a lot with my friend. And just by testing, really. You know?
Yeah.
I get a lot of emails from people who want to be, like, food stylists. And I say to them all the same thing. You just have to test and test and test and try to become better and better and better. Because it's the only way to become really good at it is to work a lot.
Yeah. So it's rote experience.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. that and assisting. Try to find like a good food stylist that you like and assist them.
Yeah.
Because that's how you're going to learn.
Yeah.
So, there are a couple of books, but you know, it's not the same thing. You need to see with your own eyes how it's done.
You need to have it in your hands. It's yeah, a very yeah. tactile thing. Very. So do you have a like a power product, a vegetable, fruit, protein that you're really good at working with? And then do you have one that just will not work for you at all?
I mean, not, I tend not to do... I mean, I do most things. Some baking can be really tricky. I have to say, there's people that specializes in there's people that specialize in everything. You know how you see like the perfect dollop on a baked potato or a dollop of cream?
Yeah,
yeah. There's one woman who specializes in dollops.
Yeah,
yeah, and she's busy.
Yeah,
there's
is her name Dollop Pardon?
Dollop Pardon. Yes. And there's people that specialize in just an ice cream.
Yeah.
To get like that perfect scoop with the skirt underneath.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more like an all around kind of guy. I like to make food that looks like it's actually made by a person. So you don't have, you know, now that it's Thanksgiving or it's been Thanksgiving, you've seen all these amazing turkeys in the magazines.
Yeah.
And they're so tight, and they're so golden, and it's just like... But they kind of, some of them looks like they're made of plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate that.
I know on the first food styling shoot I was ever on, we sprayed the shit out of a turkey with floor spray.
Yeah.
And then torched it with a heating element.
Yeah.
And we had to go through, I don't know how many dozen, but they started rotting from the inside out.
Of course.
It was hot lights, not strobes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I almost didn't eat turkey for, you know, a few years because of that shoot.
I was on a shoot once where we made a turkey, but there wasn't completely happy with it. But the turkey was in a perfect position on the table. It was with like a bunch of food. So they wanted us to leave the turkey so that we can place a new turkey exactly where it was.
Yeah.
So they left the turkey there overnight. It was so horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, God, the next day. Just, yeah.
So actually, that leads me onto this idea of... You know, all this food's being cooked on set. Mm. Do you make it so it's edible? I mean,
yeah. Often we eat it for lunch.
Yeah.
So very it's often.
Sustainable in a sense.
Yeah. I my secret trick is a little spray bottle of water.
Yeah.
To keep things moist and stuff like that. It's and but the reason why is of course now that everything is digital.
Mm-hmm.
So you know now you put the food in front of the camera, snap, snap, snap. And you're more or less done.
Yeah.
Unless there's like tons of tweaking. But, you know, in the olden days, it was like, you know, very, very, you know, heavy lighting, Polaroids, everything took a lot of time. So often you had to make the food like 2 or 3 times. But now it's like a dream.
Yeah. So now that the workflow has changed,
mm-hmm.
What things have been eliminated? You don't have to make as many...
No, you can actually use real ice cream. You can use real cream. You can use real stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be fake anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
So that must be exhilarating.
Well, it is, because you can actually eat it. It's horrible to waste, you know... We waste so much food. It's horrible.
Yeah.
But now, when it's edible, we can actually give it away... After the shoot, we often leave it for like assistants to take home or the people that work in the studio.
Yeah.
We don't throw away that much stuff, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Because it feels horrible to throw away like 10 turkeys.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't even think of how many or how much has been thrown away on past photo shoots.
Yeah, no, it's horrible. I do. If we have a lot, I will call up like... the Salvation Army or something, and ask them to come and get it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's good stuff.
Yeah. And it looks great, too, I'm sure.
it looks beautiful.
Yeah. So, in the magazine, you actually have a section about a class that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a beautiful studio. Which one was that?
It was Shoot and Kitchen in Tribeca.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
Yeah. And what do you teach? I mean, what are the steps that you give students?
Well, it's two parts. I talk about, you know, food styling, all that stuff. And then I do it with Colin Cook. He's a photographer and he he talks about photography,
yeah,
lighting, finding the right angle, all that. It's really fun. We just had it once. We're gonna have it again this spring, and it was so much fun.
Yeah,
it was amazing. I take them through, you know, picking up props, you know, making the recipes, finding the ingredients, finding the props, and then I take them through the food styling of every image.
Yeah,
and set it up, and then Colin shoots it. They can try. They can shoot it. We have a great lunch, and you know, it's fun, really fun.
Yeah, and the majority of what you do during that class, as far as the images seemed in the magazine, are they just simple little tabletops, or
yeah, mostly.
And there was a backdrop underneath.
Actually, we were shooting a real story.
Yeah,
for the spring issue, so it'll be in the spring issue.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, yeah, because I wanted people to see, you know, something real. I didn't want to fake something.
Yeah,
I thought it was just silly.
You show the fruits of their labor too, and.
Yeah. And you know, people had so much fun. They came from, like, there was one from DC, one from Boston, one from Dallas. So I got a little nervous.
Yeah.
Oh my God, people are flying in. That's a little much. But it was great.
Yeah.
They had a really good time.
And is that studio all natural light?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you use studio, or do you try to hone in on this winter Nordic illumination?
Well, I don't like if I'm shooting for, you know, if I'm shooting for another magazine, I don't have anything to say, really, you know. Otherwise, then I'll do my job and that's it. But if we're shooting for Sweet Paul and the photographer comes and he puts up, you know, lighting, I sort of start to itch, because I don't like food that's lit with lights. I like natural light.
Yeah.
And even if it's like, you know, okay, if it's dark, we'll work with that, you know. And now it's a whole trend, you know, things are, you know, a lot of shoots now are much darker than they used to be. You know, the whole Nordic trend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you actually, and I commend you for this, because I don't think people highlight this enough, a section all about winter greens.
Mm-hmm.
And as a photographer, I know two things that I like not shooting, and those are brown proteins and sauces, and cooked greens. They just always kind of looked very, I don't know, unattractive. But contrasting it with all that darkness was just really beautiful and really...
Yeah, they did. A guy called Kevin shot that. He did a really good job with that, I have to say.
Yeah.
There's something about shooting food on something dark. It makes the food pop a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it just becomes very beautiful and very sensual. I love that whole, you know, the whole dark vibe.
Yeah, it's having worked in restaurants for years. The majority of plateware that you see is the opposite.
Yes.
It's white.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hope for that to change?
I would love to go to a restaurant that have black
plates.
Yeah. That'd be really cool. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah. I think, I mean, like Noma specifically.
Yes, yes.
I know they have a couple darker palettes, and sometimes you get cheese on a black slate or... But yeah, the progression of the meal, the plates usually don't change that much.
No, I mean, food always looks beautiful on a white plate. There are certain colors that doesn't work that well, like yellow, red, some greens. It just kills the food. So I always tend to go for something very light, like white or cream, or something dark, like dark blue, dark purple, black, dark gray. It's really pretty.
Yeah. So, what are the hardest things to shoot? Are they specific colors, textures, shapes?
Well, you should actually ask a photographer that.
Yeah.
But
what are the hardest things for you to style, then, for a photographer?
So, meat can be sometimes a little difficult.
Yeah.
Because of the texture and, you know, the... you have to get that really beautiful golden crispy outside for meat. Sometimes it's a little difficult. I would say that might be the most difficult one. Other than that, everything has a certain beauty to it. So yeah, I would say meat.
Yeah. I had this other question circled, ready to go until you walked into the studio and you handed me a printed version of Sweetball.
Oh, yeah.
Why print? Why digital? What are the advantages, pros, cons?
Well, unless your last name is Hearst or Trump.
Yeah.
And unless you're a trust fund baby, it's, you know, I don't have like millions of dollars to put into a printed magazine, because giving out a printed magazine is really expensive.
I feel honored then to have one.
Yes. While online is something that more or less everyone can do, it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
So that's why it's online. You can get printed copies. You go to magcloud.com and you can order copies.
Oh, cool. What is MagCloud?
It's a print-on-demand service. So they will print any online magazine on demand.
Huh. So, I mean, that might be a good thing for stylists and photographers to put together portfolios or their own.
Yes, work. Yes, definitely, definitely. Yeah. It's great. I'm hoping, you know, in the future that it will be a printed magazine. I think it will be. I'm just waiting for Oprah to call.
Yeah.
Oprah.
She listens to this show, you know.
Yeah. Actually, I think it might be Gail that's calling. Because, yeah. You know. So, Gail, call me.
Have you worked, I saw on your client, you've worked for Oprah magazine.
Yeah, in the past. I have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you worked directly with...
With Oprah?
Yeah.
No. Not that many people come close to Oprah.
Does she really exist?
Well, I hear she exists.
Yeah, yeah.
I have people that know people that know people that have met her.
Yeah. So, I mean, working for her, are you underneath the guise of her style? I mean...
Of course, yeah.
So what does... Well, let's just play this game. What does Oprah tell you to, you know, style? What does she tell you to do on set?
No, but they will have a certain... You know, they have their own aesthetics and their own color scheme. And they will tell you more or less... More everything what to do.
Yeah. Can you break down magazines and say, well, this magazine does this style, this color scheme. This magazine
does... Yeah. Certain magazines will give you a color scheme. This is the colors you're supposed to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And they will give you a sketch. And they will give you the recipes. And they will tell you exactly how it's supposed to be. So, you know... Which is fine, because, you know, it makes your life much easier.
Yeah.
Because then you know exactly what it's going to be like. But it's not maybe the most creative thing. But that's when you make your own magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I see. So it was literally after 20 years of having other people tell you what to do that you realized you knew what you wanted to do.
Yeah. It happened. I came home after a shoot and I was really upset because I saw something really pretty turn into something that wasn't that pretty because of, you know, people, and I was kind of like bitching about it.
Yeah.
And my partner said, well, make your own magazine then. And I was like, ha ha ha, so funny, who's gonna pay for that, you? And then it sort of went with me, and I was like, oh. And then the whole, you know, online thing came, so here I am.
Yeah, perfect time.
Seven issues later.
Excellent. Well, no, I've been a fan since day one.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
You know, I really appreciate you being on. And if you've not seen Sweetball Magazine, just type it into Google. Sweetballmagazine-digital.com to see it online. It is a fantastic publication. And I do hope to see it in print, because there's something lovely about having it in your hand as well.
Yes, of course. It's, yeah. It's nice to... I'm the kind of person that reads magazines in the bathtub. And, you know,
you got to get waterproof paper, then.
Well, I was more thinking, like, you know, I shouldn't really bring my iPad to the bathtub, but I just still do. But it would be much easier with a real magazine.
No, so. I mean, I see that as the future. Underwater magazine.
Yes, yeah. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul, so much.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkhill, hoping to have you next year, Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.